This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
Okay, it's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a great day. We're going to take a look at Cowboys Twitter, some of the top tweets going viral about America's team or even from America's team, and some good tweets here as we jump right into it on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. Coming up at 3:20, Fish is going to join us, Mike Fisher. He'll have the very latest. Okay, let's start with this question and answer from our buddy Brian Broaddus, who's going to have the pre- and post-game show along with Ari Temkin coming up Thursday at 4 or 5 o'clock, somewhere around there. They'll be starting it, firing it up. So he was asked by somebody named Denair NYC, a Cowboys fan up there. I feel like the point everyone's missing is Garrett has shown they cannot win against good teams, the very teams who will be waiting for you in the playoffs. So why not fire him and see if Rashard can give you a boost? And Broaddus replies, I think he has bigger fish in mind, and if Chris were to get them in the playoffs, that would get in the way of his plan. I believe he wants a clean path to hiring the next coach. That's why I believe he's going to let Garrett finish it out. That's a very interesting theory. I thought the reason Jerry didn't cap him last Thursday night was pure emotional attachment, but Broaddus brings in either an alternate theory or an additional theory that kind of supplements Jerry's motivation.
So if we're guessing at Jerry's thoughts, I will agree with Brian there, because if you have an idea in your head, and again, I'll reset. I'm 99.9% sure that Jason Garrett won't be the coach next year. I think everybody agrees there now. That if Jerry has already got his plan and the guys that he wants to pursue and this, and then you give a guy a temporary job and he does well, now all of a sudden the fan base is like, wait, he saved us. He's the best. Hire him. And Jerry's like, well, I had a plan. To me, I would say, oh, my God, no, I have multiple good candidates here. But I understand the idea of muddying the waters, and I'll give you an example that's not a perfect one, because Rashard's at least been a coordinator, kind of, for a long time. The reason that Freddie Kitchens is the Browns head coach right now is because when they fired their bad head coach, the team got going. And so in the offseason, it was like, all right, what are we going to do? Well, quarterback likes this guy. We ended the year well. He's our head coach. And it turned out it was a terrible idea. And they probably should have scoured the world for the best candidates.
They should have got another quarterback.
What, sir! All right, that's it. We're going to have to make a 10-year Baker bet.
So here's where I'm at with it. Jerry has a thought that the season could be saved by bringing in Chris Rashard as the head coach.
If that's true, then you should have done it.
But he's saying, I'm not going to do it. If Broaddus is correct, he's saying, I'm not going to do it because if he's actually good at this, I don't want to hire him as the head coach. So the chance of saving the season to me is firing Garrett, which, look, that's now passed. Should have done it on Friday, but Jerry was crying about having to fire his friend, so he couldn't do it after the game. And so to me, that tweet is interesting to me, because I find it as Chris Rashard isn't even a candidate for the head coaching job, and he's not even going to give him a chance, because his chance would be now. Here's the team that we thought was a Super Bowl contender. I'm going to hand it over to you for four games and see if you can do anything, and then possibly do anything in the playoffs. You do great. You have a great chance of keeping this job. You don't, that's fine. We know that you're not the guy. See you later. You're off the Cowboys organization, and we move on and we move forward. But Jerry's saying, no, I don't want that risk of actually doing good this year with him.
Do you think it would look bad? Would the fan base be that disappointed in him if he said, yes, Chris Rashard went 3-1 and won a playoff game, but we still don't feel like...
It depends who you hire. It depends who you hire. If you hired a...
Some fans would no doubt be disappointed. I just don't know if the volume.
How many would
enough.
Be disappointed if, for instance, what happened was Chris Rashard goes 3-1, you beat the 49ers in the wild card round, then you lose, and then Jerry trades a first round pick for Sean Payton? Are there people clamoring for you should have left Rashard?
I think some would. Yeah, some would say you didn't have to give up a one. You had the next guy who could motivate and all that. But I don't think the percentage is high enough to worry about it. But apparently Jerry Jones is. I just think he wants to give Garrett a shot to possibly still be his Tom Landry is a much bigger possible explanation than I don't want to risk Rashard taking the ball and running with it and having to disappoint fans.
And I think it lends some credibility to what you guys always talk about with Jerry being comfortable. because Jerry's going to, it's going to be uncomfortable not bringing Jason Garrett back because it's his friend, right? That's going to be uncomfortable.
Doesn't want to have that conversation.
But the smoothest way for Jerry to be comfortable is to let the season ride out and then call him in and be like, well, you know, you see how it ended. And
I tried. I gave you every last chance.
I gave you the shot and the contract's up. So you're not fired. I'm just going to offer a contract to someone else.
Yeah.
So I didn't fire you. And like, that is the most comfortable way forward. The uncomfortable way would be to give somebody else a shot. And I do think that giving somebody else a shot would give this team a jolt, or it's your best chance to give this team a jolt, because I also think it unclutters the top.
Yeah.
It unclutters your leadership, and it's very clear who's doing what, and you give them a shot. And if at the end of the year it went well, oh, no!
Yeah.
Well, I got to interview this guy and see if I want him to be the head coach, and he might be good at it. Like, oh no, what a terrible outcome that is. Like, that's not a bad thing.
I mean, does he think that parity is such a ruler in this league that maybe neither coach will have that big of an impact? That's just the way the ball bounces on Sunday in an 8-8 league. And, you know, if it's going to play out and our team's going to get fortunate, I want Jason Garrett to have the credit for it other than complicate my hire. I could see wanting to have a clean hiring process, but not as your primary motivation. That being said,
I think it's possible that he thinks Garrett gives them a better chance than not having Garrett in the next four games and playoffs. I think it's totally possible that Jerry believes that.
Well, and that's funny because he would obviously be pointing to the metric or stat, however you want to define that, that no team has ever changed coaches and made the playoffs. But that would be running opposite to what he said about in-game win probabilities. You know, that's just a history of what happened. It doesn't necessarily...
Well, he wouldn't be quoting an analytic. He's just talking about history. You just pick what words you want to use.
Okay, so we move on here in Cowboys Twitter. And these things are just going viral right now in real time as the Cowboys locker room's been open. And Clarence Hill tweeting, Amari Cooper plans to re-sign with the Cowboys. He has no interest in going anywhere else. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, of course. Like I just said, I love it here. I want to be here. I just love this situation, my teammates, and I just feel it's the place for me. He went on to say, he has not yet chosen sides in his agent battle. He still talks to Mr. Fields and Mr. Siegel. Yeah, they have split, and Fields is now with a new agency, and this is one of the main reasons that negotiations have not gone very far at all, is his agency split up, and he's not sure which one he's going to roll
with.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Now, are you guys, no doubt, because, okay, Amari's number is the top of the receiver market, right? It's $19, $20 million a year. Are you guys, no doubt, 100% five-year deal, $100 million, Coop, let's go?
Yeah, I think that's your best option.
Yeah. Okay.
I think, I could be sold on franchise tagging him and just seeing how the year plays out because, you know, if he does continue to be hurt, we might draft another wide receiver, see how that rookie does.
Right.
I either want to go with three strong wide receivers.
You see my guy declared for the draft today.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
My guy Jalen Reagor at TCU, he's declared.
Well, I think whatever we have to do to keep this team together, because it's proven that the success here is just so amazing that we need to make sure everybody's paid handsomely so they really give that full effort we need every Sunday or Thursday.
I don't know what to think of this team
even though
for
I do
next
think
year.
We should have Amari Cooper on
but
the team.
Since 2014, they've had essentially the same core. I think it's a hit or miss group, unfortunately. They've been going 1 year on, 1 year off, and unfortunately we're very much still in that cycle. And I don't know what the answer is, but at times with essentially the same damn team, they've looked nearly invincible. I think leadership and direction is enough.
And playing better defense and special teams and turning the ball over.
Holy cow. And special
like
teams is crazy.
Yes. I'll tell you what. There are on-field things that need to be a lot better.
We talk a lot about Garrett, and I understand changing Garrett could change everything. Rod Marinelli needs to be fired, too. For his decisions on Taco Charlton and Tristan Hill, he should be fired. That's it. You're done. You're not hitting
if
on
you
David
say,
Irvings anymore or anything. Like, maybe you can stay, but you're done on that Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in the draft.
Absolutely with that. I mean, if you want a strong say in the draft room, you're going to have to be held strongly accountable to it. Back to Cowboys Twitter, John Michaud of The Athletic tweeting, angry Dallas Cowboys have a chippy practice Sunday. No one's happy. That's for sure.
Like that. So Mike mentioned this, and
they're going to try now, guys.
Right. I get tired of being Cowboys optimism guy when they give me very few reasons for it. But when I first heard after the game that, hey, there's a player that's ranting and raving and yelling in the locker room, and then later it was, turns out it's Michael Bennett, my very first thought was, well, Michael Bennett was in Seattle, then Michael Bennett was in New England, and now Michael Bennett's in Dallas, and it's taken him only this long to get in the locker room and be like, guys, this is not how winners do it.
No.
Like, this ain't it. No. It's taken three, and then now, in the week following, Ezekiel Elliott is talking about how practice is chippy, and it's like, is it possible that 12 games into the season, it took one player to get here and be like, that's not how you prepare to be a champion, and now the players are like, well, hot darn.
Yeah.
Let's get after
it. Well, you know, I think because so many of the Cowboys are drafted into this system, their only NFL experience is how Jason Garrett does it.
Right.
You know, and not that Jason Garrett is all wrong or all bad or anything, but this, hey, let's take one step at a time and don't get too excited. You know, then you might not be able to think clearly. All of that stuff can have a really, like, not suffocating, but hypnotizing effect. And you can begin to think that, you know, strong amounts of passion or saying, damn it, that wasn't good enough, that's a bad thing because that might take away your focus. You know, and for a 50-something-year-old who's from the Ivy League, that works. In football, it's about letting that fire burn. And damn it, if it can't burn 4 weeks in a row when you need it to, because you don't want to get too high because then you'll crash, then you know what? You ain't meant to do it. Because what athletes do in their 20s is they get so damn worked up, they want to run out there and rip somebody's freaking head off. And if you're constantly trying to calm them down and everything, you can't let that inferno even start to burn. So I hope Michael Bennett's message was exactly that. That, guys, you know, you haven't been anywhere else. Let me tell you something about how it feels on a winning team when you go out and play like that and have a massive disappointment in a damn near must-win game.
I just thought Friday I ranted on this, and I just thought, how sad is this? And thank you for Michael Bennett. Thank you for trying to wake up a bunch of guys that don't want to be woke. They no matter what happened this year, and I get, like, nobody should have gone into the locker room after you're 3-0 and you lose to the New Orleans Saints 12-10. Time and place, that was, you're 3-1, you just lost a close game, you didn't play well, especially on offense, you were really bad. That's not the time to then close the locker room doors as a leader and start screaming and yelling because you lost one game this year. But you get blown out by Green Bay with just a horrible game. Nobody wanted to say anything. You lose to the Jets, everybody's like, hey, it's all right, no problem. You lose to Minnesota after effing up the game late again with major mistakes from your coaching staff. Nobody wants to stand up and say anything. But Michael Bennett, for three games, is like, this is a losing organization with a losing attitude. And I didn't come here for this short amount of time to be a loser.
Yeah.
And so he stands up and starts screaming to the guys. And then we hear the other veteran guys, the other captains, then spoke. They're like, damn, I guess I should probably speak since this dude is really letting us have it here. Here's my time now to stand up. Like, too late, dumb butts. Like, well, you guys have sleptwalked through a whole season.
Okay. And okay, so one of the other things about this, and I don't know who tweeted it, a lot of people have, though, it's been a discussion point. We believe the potential is in there. It's not that they're just not good enough, right? Mm. They stack
up.
I believe they're not
as good talent-wise as I thought they were, but I believe there's plenty of talent there to be a 10 to 12 win team in a Super Bowl contender.
Especially with this week of a schedule. They've had one of the easiest schedules in the NFL.
And I think the reason they're not good enough is because the coaches aren't reaching them. They're not putting
I think that's part of it. Like, the Garrett message, I believe in the Garrett message. I believe his message is a good one. I believe any message can get old over time. But to me, it's some coaches in the NFL, and I don't know the exact number, but some of them are absolutely week in, week out on Sunday an advantage for your team, and he's not. To me, it's that simple for him.
So
it's not even a matter of
the game management type stuff.
Well, the game management.
But they've won in spite of that so frequently.
Well, it's not just in game management, because this is something I heard Jesse Holly talking about on Twitter. Like, no, the Cowboys haven't quit on Sunday. But what happens on Sunday is a reflection of what happens Monday through Friday or Monday through Saturday, right?
Yeah.
The way that you prepare affects the way that you play. So I don't think that your coach gives you an advantage on Sundays with the things that he does Monday through Friday, like quite a few guys can in the league. Sean Payton makes a difference every week. He makes a difference. Jason Garrett doesn't. And if he does, it's a negative. Hmm. He's not a difference-making coach. And for the Cowboys, when there's no salary cap for coaching, They should never not have a difference-making coach.
Okay, let's step aside, get the very latest from Mike Fisher on the Cowboys and the Mavericks. That's coming up next on DFW Sports Station. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. It's time for some Mike Fisher here. Segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you're hurt in an accident, it's not your fault. Call the office of Frankel & Frankel, 214-333-3333, frankelfirm.com. Official lawyers of the Tolo, principal office, Dallas, Texas. He's at Fish Sports on Twitter. He is the great Mike Fisher. And a good afternoon to you, sir. You have a nice Thanksgiving at the house?
A lovely Thanksgiving, although Thanksgiving is Thursday, so that's a football day for us. But, yeah, we jacked around, if that's what you're asking me. Yeah, we
good
jacked
stuff.
Around all weekend.
Okay, so let's start with the Mavs, man. You know, the Luka Doncic story, the Maverick story, going to the next level with their victory yesterday afternoon in Los Angeles against the Lakers in convincing fashion. And as Baskey pointed out, they have beaten three really good teams on the road this year. That's the mark of a real contender, if you ask me, Fish.
Yeah, and we're going to have to put the two Knicks losses behind us and just deal with that. That's part of basketball, too, when you play 82 games. But I must say, and tell me if you guys are with me here, I was stunned by the Lakers thing. I was just shocked. They manhandled the Lakers. They came out slow and got pushed around a little bit physically and then out-physicaled them back. And then Luka Doncic, obviously, as he did to Harden and Westbrook before that, Luka out LeBron.
Yeah.
Just shocking. I mean, really, seriously.
I was, too, just because Luka had played so bad against LeBron last year. Obviously, he had a great game the first game of the season against him, but then going to L.A., he got off to a slow start, and I thought, oh, he's still not over. Luka's not over being on the court with LeBron and especially in L.A., and then the third quarter happened where he was like, yes, I'm the best player in the world, and everybody's going to have to deal with it.
And, Michael, what's awesome about it is, had that collapse happened, had it been like, oh boy, LeBron's in his head, he's 20, that would have been okay.
Yeah, right? Yeah, 100%. We're a growing, learning team, and we are growing super fast.
And so all of this is super gravy. I'm trying to think what we all predict. I know you guys probably, I don't think I predicted the Mavericks were going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think I went like 43-39, and I said 8 seed because I like to be positive.
Yeah, I thought 44-38 and ninth seed, just missing the playoffs.
I had 52, Fish.
All right, well, that's because you're the doctor.
Yeah.
But the rest of us mortals, I really did. I thought, man, if you could get to 500, that's not going to get you in the playoffs, but what a gigantic leap that'd be. Now I've got Daryl Morey, the GM in Houston, our old friend, saying on Twitter, somebody said, well, you know, they could make the playoffs. And he said, make the playoffs. They're one of the best teams in basketball. And then you guys do that 538 probability thing. You're into that in general, aren't you?
Yeah, we're going to do that a little bit later.
98%.
Pretty awesome.
Now, I don't know how that thing works. Yeah, something like that. But I believe that it's got validity.
It's efficiencies and strength of schedules,
yeah.
You know, per 100 possession type stuff.
Okay, I'll give you a fancy number. Because do you believe that James Harden is an interesting comp, at least interesting?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. It's a great comp. It's the best comp amongst active players, I think.
Okay. One great thing about that comp is it gets us past comparing him to white guys. Huh. What are we doing? He's nothing like Chris Mullin. I saw Chris Mullin play in person a lot. There's no similarities except for one thing between Luka Doncic and Chris Mullin. He's not really like Larry Bird. He's not like Larry Bird. He's not like Dirk. He's not like any of that. He's like James Harden. Now, so get a load of this fancy number. I know you guys will love this. Harden, and this is one of the things we hate about him, don't we, is that it's all ISO stuff. It's just him.
And, yeah, but if we're being honest, there's a lot of Luka too.
Okay, here's I'm glad I led you down that trap, Dr. Dawson.
Oh, you got me now.
Touches the ball 87 times a game. That's ninth in the NBA. Luka touches it 99. Obviously, he's the point guard. That's okay. Harden passes the ball of those I'm getting jumbled up in my own thing. Harden passes the ball 48 times. Okay, you with me? Out of his 87,
Yeah.
Luka passes the ball 66 out of his 99. So there's certainly similarities in, you know, I'm going to shoot a three-pointer and pretend I draw a foul. And obviously the step-back 30-footer is the ISO of all ISOs. But the percentages there of the times when, okay, Harden's got the ball, what's he going to do with it? He touches it 87 times per game and passes 48. Luka touches it 99 times a game and passes it 66. That tells us the one difference, that Luka not only is doing this with grace and artistry and a smile on his face, maybe Harden has a smile behind the beard and we just never see it, but he's doing it in an unselfish way. And I wonder if one of the reasons when then Rockets get to the playoffs that they don't advance the way their talent says they should is because you now you need help in the playoffs because the other teams are better. And I've spent 82 games having four other guys just stand around. The Luka Doncic Mavericks do not just stand around. If you cut, you get the ball. I don't care if you're Maxi Kleba or Dwight Powell or Seth Curry. If you cut or if I drive and kick it out, you get the ball with Luka. And the unselfishness is, I think, the biggest difference between, and I mean unselfish style of play. I'm sure James Harden's a lovely person. But the unselfish style of play is what makes Luka, I'm not saying better than Harden, but certainly different than Harden.
Yeah, he's a little bit different. You know, I think with Harden, he is more of an attack scorer with his usage. And in order to win in the playoffs like that, I do believe you got to be like LeBron or Giannis. You know, if you can't be at the absolute top of doing it that way, then I think more of a team approach is going to, you know, affect your team's points per 100 possessions a lot better. And I think that's the biggest difference. Harden is such a dynamic player and he's a willing passer, but very few people get the LeBron gift of being able to keep track of 10 different players on the court at all times and seeing things that, you know, 99% of basketball players just don't.
And I think that Luka has that vision.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that we want, and this can't happen yet, can it? Although all these other things are happening so fast. The other benefit that Harden gets, that LeBron gets, they get calls.
Yeah.
And Luka doesn't get that yet, but he's only 20. We envision him playing 15 more years here. So, you know, maybe there'll be 14 years of him getting superstar calls. So we'll just have to wait a little bit for that.
Yeah, probably. And, you know, if he wants to engineer even more calls, maybe he could study how James Harden does it. And I would bet Mavs fans won't be nearly as annoyed as they are watching James Harden do it.
Exactly. All right, let's go to the Cowboy coaching search, shall we?
Yeah, let's do that.
Woo, woo, Chris Peterson time.
Yeah, now the first thing we have to do is acknowledge Jason Garrett's situation. I think Jerry going on NFL Network last week and basically saying Super Bowl or else, did we all hear it kind of that same way?
Yep.
Okay. I think that's the lead story here. I think the second paragraph here is my belief that, okay, but, you know, premium playoff success. Jeffrey, what if the Cowboys get to the NFC Championship game and play this fantastic game and lose? That will mean the Cowboys have just won seven straight games and then lost a classic. I might not fire the coach. I mean to say that Jerry might not fire the coach. That would be an odd situation to fire that coach. Agreed?
Yeah, I just don't think that situation is realistic.
I don't either, and either does Jerry. After the Buffalo game, when I set him up for his answer about keeping the coach, I then followed up by saying, is part of your belief that if you dismissed Garrett and elevated somebody else on the staff, that you'd be less likely to win games? And his answer, after he got through his, you know, Jerry salad, word salad, is we would have zero chance without Jason. That's what he said. We'd have zero chance without Jason.
Throw up.
Well, you know what that means is him and Steven thought about it. They thought about what it would be like without Jason, and we elevate Rod, or we elevate Kellen, or we elevate Chris.
Yeah.
And they thought about it and came to the conclusion, no, that would not help us more.
That must have been quite an objective analysis. Man, I'd love to be a fly on that confirmation bias wall.
Well,
how terrible are our assistants? My God.
Yeah, we can disagree with their conclusion, Gavin. But you have to give him credit for having thought about it.
Sure, yeah. Let's sit down and see how we feel.
Right, so I want that to be the end of, oh, they love Garrett so much, they never even – no, they did. They sat down and calculated what they thought their chances would be if they dumped him
and
moved to a different guy.
The funny thing is, I bet you they used the historical stat that no coach has been fired and had that team go on to make the playoffs. And that's an analytic of sorts. So while we can do mental gymnastics to defend Jerry and Steven in this, we also have to point out their hypocrisy.
I would throw this into the gumbo that Jerry also talked in that briefing with us after the Bills game about his read for the room. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
He said, I know the men in the room. I'm in the room. I talk to the men in the room. So I'm not saying he doesn't have Garrett bias, recency bias, ego bias. I'm saying I do believe that ownership has done its best to gauge what would be the best answer now for the coach. Now, they're not going to win. They might win the next four games. They really might.
Sure.
Agreed?
Sure, they could.
They could. Have you ever seen Christmas Vacation where Chevy Chase throws the fit and he's like, we're in hell?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is where we're at right now with Jason Garrett.
Okay, so they could win four. I wouldn't personally bet on it. All the odds makers would, I guess. But then they'd have to win three more to do what we're talking about. So now let's move on to the next thing. If you're the Joneses, you have one eye on a coaching search. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, yeah. They're putting that together quite a bit.
Okay. Why would I not call Bill Parcells?
I would say because I'm tired of getting the opinions of people who have nothing to do with current football.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said Bill Parcells. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I meant Bill Belichick. Hey,
oh.
Lucius, can you erase that?
Yeah. You're good, man.
We'll make sure it doesn't make it onto
the
podcast.
Yep. You're cleaned up, cuz.
He does call friends to make draft picks right when their time's up.
Yeah, call Bill Belichick. Call everybody. Call anybody who's anybody.
But the first guy, call Bill Belichick.
Yep.
Now, you can't run your cowboy plane up there with the cowboy star on the tail. And you're going to have to do this a little behind the scenes.
Are you telling this team to tamper?
You'd have to talk to Mr. Kraft.
Uh-huh. He's busy on weekends.
He is busy, but I got to call Bill Parcells. I mean, not
Belichick.
Bill Belichick.
Both of them.
Hey, Lucius.
Dump that. Yeah,
I got you again, dog. You're good.
I got to call Sean Payton. Well, he just signed an extension. I don't care. That doesn't mean I can't call the owner and say I want to talk to your coach.
Yeah, coaches have been traded for.
Okay, and then of course the owner says no, you can't talk to him, and then Jerry says, but if you let me talk to him, I'll give you a blank. And if you let me have them, I'll give you three blanks.
Mm.
Okay, I got to talk.
That's just
to
Robert
Nick Saban.
Kraft's game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. I got to talk to Nick Saban.
Mm. Absolutely, yeah.
Jeffrey,
don't stop.
I get you. And what you're saying is talk to all of the greatest coaches on planet Earth because there's no salary cap for coaching. And if it costs you 25, like if Bill Belichick answers the phone and he says, "Hey, Tom's going to retire and my contract's up," if you're Jerry Jones, the right thing to do is to, you said you'd write any check. Hey, Bill, you're making $12 million a year. I'll triple it because I don't care about money. I want the Super Bowl. Here's $36 million a year. Please come
now,
coach the Cowboys.
Then Belichick says, you know what, Jerry? I would be interested in that. I would like complete control of
and everything.
Now we're
well, but what does Jerry say? Because to Parcells, he said, okay. Because he needed something. He's now 77, and he needs something.
Yep.
He needs a Super Bowl.
He had a great partnership with Jimmy, who had a great deal of control. Bill Parcells had a great deal of control. Jason Garrett's got a gigantic voice in this building. And so I would want him to say yes. I guess I'm calling Urban Meyer, even though, to me, Urban Meyer's the one that volunteered himself for the job. But I want to see if Urban Meyer, if I think he can win at this level. Your Chris Peterson idea, I don't really think there's a conspiracy there, Jeffrey, do you?
Where?
With the Chris Peterson.
No.
That's a little sloppy. That's kind of a sloppy way for Chris Peterson to move from Washington to Dallas to quit. That's weird.
It could happen. I'm sure they like him. I'm sure they know him and like him. I mean, I guess
they
it
must.
Could happen, but I'll take him at his word for now.
Okay, so I'm interviewing every defensive coordinator, some of whom Jerry's never even heard of yet, and offensive coordinators. But I'm also interviewing head coaches in the NFL and head coaches in college. This has got to be, and I'm already seeing some people, guys, who are go, it's going to come down to these two guys, or it's already coming down to these three. Whoa, it can't come down to 30 yet.
Okay.
Jerry, the defensive coordinator of the 49ers, what's his name?
Robert Saleh.
Okay, Jerry Jones doesn't even know how to pronounce that name yet.
Oh. Well, it's misspelled.
But he's going to. So this needs to be a gigantically wide search. And if you're the Dallas Cowboys, and if coaches really do think this is the big stage, and they do, then you call William, whatever his middle name is, Belichick, and work your way down
okay.
from there.
Okay, we should be more realistic, though, and put ourselves in Jerry's shoes in this scenario. He would be calling Bill to see if he would mentor Jason Garrett for his fourth contract with the Cowboys.
No, I'm not.
Got to run,
maybe
Fish.
Maybe what would happen is maybe Belichick would say, I got a guy for you. His name's Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, maybe.
But it's still part of the 30 phone calls that have to happen here, or the Joneses won't be doing their jobs.
Well said, Fish. We got to run. Have a good one. We'll catch up with you tomorrow. He is at Fish Sports on Twitter, and next is Nuggets. Mike, where are we going?
Well, I can't wait for Jerry Jones's decision because he's great at picking coaches, isn't he? All right, next one. We're going to talk about breaking news. A third baseman has signed a major deal in baseball.
Yep, Mitsubishi. That's Mesquite Mitsubishi. That's the brand new Outlander Sport SUV. Starting at $16,900, people. Visit mymitsu.com.
Okay, thank you very much, Lucius. It is the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan, and time for some baseball nuggets. Here's Mikey B.
All right, well, first I want to talk about my buddy Jared Sandler. If you go at Jared Sandler on Twitter, you will see his at Sandlot Charities auction is live right now at 1053thefan.com/Sandlot. They have autographs from Dirk, Luca, Dak, Zeke, Staubach, Emmett, Troy, Tyler Seguin, Ben, Nolan, Pudge, KP, Kidd. So, you know, he struggled to get decent players from the DFW Metroplex to autograph things for his charity. Tough. But those auctions are live right now. If you want to check those out at 1053thefan.com/Sandlot. Mike Moustakas has signed with the Cincinnati Reds. 4 years, $64 million.
I saw he's going to play second?
Yeah, so he can play second base. So he is a versatile guy that – I don't think the Rangers were interested in because he's a left-handed hitter. Mm. And I think they're trying to get rid of left-handed hitters. It's not that Mike Moustakas isn't good. He's really good. Been good for the Royals, been good for the Brewers. It's just that what fits with the Rangers right now is not getting another position that should be a right-handed bat that bats left-handed. A lot of times, that's good. But when your first baseman, second baseman, and all your outfielders and DH all bat left-handed, it becomes a little bit of an issue to then have six or seven of your guys in your lineup all batting left-handed.
Yeah, it's not a competitive advantage.
So I don't think that is a big deal, but it does take a third baseman off the market. And as Jeff said, he's going to play some second base with the Cincinnati Reds. I'm sure if their third baseman needs a day off here and there, he can slide over to third base if they need. But T.R. Sullivan brings up another name that I've been talking about this offseason. And it says, now that the Rangers have signed Kyle Gibson, and they're not done, but they're just like, look, they got their first piece, and that was to get kind of a mid-range starting pitcher to shore up only having two starting pitchers they could rely on going into the 2020 season. Now they have three that they can rely on. They are talking possibly to the New York Yankees, and they're talking to them. It's just how seriously are they talking to them? And it's about Miguel Andujar.
Let's go!
As I've brought up, Miguel Andujar almost won the Rookie of the Year a year ago. Then he hurt his elbow. I'm not sure in spring training or early in the year. I think it was in spring training. And he had Tommy John surgery. He should be, because he plays third base and he's not a pitcher, he should be ready to go to start the season next year. But this would be a guy that you can build your organization around. In fact, if you were asking me, who do you think is a better guy to build your organization around, Miguel Andujar or Joey Gallo? Right now, I would lean towards Miguel Andujar.
Woo.
Not taking a shot at Joey Gallo. Joey Gallo had a great 70 games last year, and he looks like a piece that you can build around too. But I do really like Miguel Andujar, who in his rookie year batted .297 with 27 homers and 92 RBIs, had an OPS of .855. Look, his defense isn't the best at third base. So it's not like we're getting Beltre 2.0 with the defense.
That's all right.
What we would be getting is Beltre with the bat. Now, I don't know how clutch he's going to be.
Yeah.
But this is a guy that in T.R. Sullivan's article said this. Right now, the Rangers do have a budget. And I did see, I don't know if it's from TR or not, but I saw that probably Anthony Rendon, you're not going to like this, Gavin.
Uh-oh.
Anthony Rendon is probably out of their price range.
Oh, no way.
So if you're wondering if they had a limit on how much they would spend on certain players, it sounds like they do, and they've heard enough from around the league of what Anthony Rendon is going to get offered by the Washington Nationals and maybe a few other teams like the LA Dodgers who are very interested in trying to swipe away Rendon from the Washington Nationals, that the Rangers can't get in the bidding war with those teams, which then makes you think they can't get in the bidding wars with Gerrit Cole either. He's getting hype from the New York Yankees, the New York Mets, the LA Dodgers, the LA Angels. Also the Houston Astros are still somewhat in on him. So there's no way that we could be in on Gerrit Cole too, I don't think, because we're going to have to outbid all the rich teams in Major League Baseball.
So Rendon or Gerrit Cole's projected salaries are bigger than the Rangers' entire offseason budget?
I guess so.
Is that right?
I guess.
So maybe they have around $25 million left to spend? Or did he get a number at all?
I don't know. No. I read an article saying that the Rangers' number for Rendon, it's already, they feel like they've already been outbid on the number they thought they could get him at. But I don't know. That's the thing. We don't know the number. There's no like NBA, like here's the max a person can make. You know, maybe Rendon's getting offered $35 million a year. I don't know, but the Rangers, whatever that number is, it sounds like the Rangers have already backed off and said, all right, Anthony Rendon is not an option here because it costs too much. And
that's fine. I'm not sure Rendon's a winning move long-term anyway. I'm not even sure I'd want him.
You know what?
Yeah.
I'm going to somewhat agree with you.
Miguel, 24-year-old.
Miguel Andujar's 24 years old. Now, he has 2 years now because he was on the 60-day disabled list, so that does count as a season in the major leagues. So you would trade for him and have 4 years of him under your control where he'd be arbitration eligible, but he's also 24. So by the time he would be a free agent, he would be 28, 29 years old. So it does make more sense if you're trying to build something for 2021/2022 to really start competing. If you had Miguel Andujar batting third or fourth in your lineup and Joey Gallo batting fourth or fifth in your lineup, that is something to do. Now, T.R. Sullivan is saying that why the Rangers could be interested is, yes, it will cost a lot of prospects. Miguel Andujar is not going to be easy to get, and there'll probably be other teams that would like to get him. But that means you're not spending any money at third base. You're only spending possible major league pitchers and then minor league prospects to get him. So now you're invested at almost league minimum at third base, so you can take all the money that you have this offseason and spend it pretty much all on pitching,
yeah,
if you'd like to, or making trades and then bringing in players that make more sense for your team.
That would be really exciting, man. You talk about a way to get an offseason hype going.
Yeah.
You know, now you're building something.
I'm going to throw this out. I think people really liked Emmanuel Clase at the end of the year because he can hit 101, 102 miles an hour. Just looking at what the Yankees need out of a Miguel Andujar trade, who they're interested in trading because Gio Urshela did such a great job for them at third base. Once he got hurt, they're like, okay, we have an asset here that could maybe get us a lot. When he comes back, we don't have a place for him to play.
Yeah.
So we don't know exactly what to do with him. Emmanuel Clase would start the conversation. So you're trading your kind of guy that you think could be your setup guy or closer of the future. That would probably be the first piece the Yankees are interested in because they don't want to just trade him and go get prospects. They'll take some prospects, but they would like starting pitching. I don't think we have anything to offer them. Mike Minor doesn't make sense for them. If you look at their rotation, it's already somewhat left-handed. So Mike Minor on a one-year contract doesn't really make sense.
And all your young guys, they'd be like, these guys have proven nothing. What do these guys do for us?
Yeah, they don't really care for – they're trying to win a World Series. So looking at Burke and Palumbo and Allard, they'd probably be like, okay, like we're maybe interested, but not
really.
That's
a good throw-in.
Yeah. And then when you look at Lance Lynn, they had Lance Lynn. They traded for him in 2018 from the Minnesota Twins, and he couldn't make their rotation for the most part. So I don't think they'd be really interested in bringing Lance Lynn back. Maybe they would, but I don't think so. So I think, all right, Emmanuel Clase would probably interest them in saying, okay, that starts the conversation. Now we probably need two premium prospects from you to get this done. And so that's probably what it would cost to get Miguel Andujar.
Would they hesitate to give up a bunch for a young third baseman because they hope that one of their first two picks this year is going to be the guy in a couple of years?
Well, what if in the trade, I don't know if they'd want to do this. What
if you throw in one
Josh Young?
Yeah.
What if it was Emmanuel Clase and the 8th overall pick in Josh Young that you get a proven person?
See what we did?
Instead of a person that you're hoping can be really good. I know the Texas Tech fans or the people that love the draft are like, oh, no, but Josh Young, you really have no clue if he's going to be good or a major league player or not. You're hoping he is. But Miguel Andujar came to the major leagues and dominated.
Hey, man, that would be a massive win. A prospect plus a guy that's kind of proven something for a player like that. Plus, you'd still have the Baylor third baseman.
Yes.
You know, so you still have a long-term prospect.
Yeah, which I do think is very tough for the Texas Rangers. I didn't understand why they did it. Sometimes you just take the best player and you just deal with it. But when you're developing two college third basemen and they're probably at the same level, like you have to play them both at third, right? They're like, no, that's – it's confusing to me, but they're going to try to make it work out and develop them both the same and maybe play the Baylor third baseman, I think, a little bit at shortstop. And my last nugget, Gavin – you're going to be really disappointed with this. I put it on Twitter, so I saw your Twitter answer. But Profar got traded today, so they were going to non-tender him, the Oakland Athletics.
Oh, we didn't get him, Gavin?
No.
We didn't get Profar.
Very disappointing.
And A.J. Preller of the San Diego Padres, formerly of the Texas Rangers in their front office, he snatched up that Profar. And so Profar will be competing to be the starting second baseman in his final year of his kind of rookie contract. He'll be a free agent after the 2019 season. But Profar goes to the San Diego Padres for not much because they were going to non-tender him. So the Padres didn't want to compete in the free agent market. They traded for the final year of Profar.
I thought, you know, even if it's a winning move where you like stuff about Profar, if you would have brought him back to play third base for this team, it would just be such a depressing kick in the gut, right? Because we've been patient with Profar. We withstood not one but two waves of hype on Profar that never came to be. And if you bring him back and drop him in our lap as some sort of a guy to get excited about, you know, I like stories about the Rangers trading for guys. Those are things they do well. Spending money in Latin America, I like those kinds of stories.
Yeah.
What I don't like is stories of bringing back retreads and guys that have been released or hurt. Or, you know, trying to develop guys, because those things just don't work.
Winter meetings start in San Diego on Sunday, and we will have John Daniels on most likely this week to get us ready for the winter meeting. So hopefully a lot of these things they're talking about can get done next week.
Okay. How confident are you that the Cowboys could still be a factor in the NFC playoff picture? What needs to happen? And after hearing Jerry crying about Jason, how sure are you that they will let him go? Let's do some Cowboys phone calls here at 877-881-1053. You want to vent or you have a great thought for us about where the Cowboys go from here? It's next in the nation.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.